This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
You may recall the famous statement regarding Julius Caesar and the feared attack by Brutus, his dear friend, to murder him. The phrase goes like this: beware the Ides of March. Beware the Ides of March. And you may say, well, what does that have to do with September? Well, what it has to do with September is I want to give you a beware. Beware September 22nd to 23rd, or September 20th to 23rd. Why? Because it's called the summit of the future. One of the most dangerous things to ever emanate out of New York and the UN since its birth. And it's coming our way. And it's coming our way by the blessing of the Biden-Harris regime that are working to subject Americans to UN government. That's true. That's the whole Marxist idea in which Kamala Harris has been raised as a consummate Marxist. That also is the root of the thinking of the Democrat Party. It's not a Democratic Party, it's the Democrat Party, friends. Use the right word. And today we're going to take a look at that summit of the future. What does it look like? What are its implications? And why should you and I care? And what does it have to do with biblical prophecy? It has everything to do with it, friends. They call it the Pact for the Future. A pact for the future? And all the world is supposed to enter into this pact? Really? What could it possibly mean? So beware the Ides of September. Beware September 20th to 23rd. It all begins next week. It all begins, well, it actually begins today. Action days begin today, and the summit begins on the 22nd. And so here we go, friends. I hope you are ready, because you need to anchor your seatbelt, because what we're about to share here on Viewpoint today is breathtaking. It's more than breathtaking. More than breathtaking. It's terrifying. They think free speech is dangerous. Making health decisions, that should be left to the experts, they say. And that was obvious during the COVID pandemic. You remember that. There was discussion among Marxists that the international groups, the World Health Organization, and the United Nations needed more authority over people. And now there's a plan that is being assembled that apparently would do just that, and Republicans are declaring war against it. It's called the Summit of the Future, being promoted by the United Nations, at which the schemes are expected to be pushed forward beginning today. GOP members, that is, Republican members of the House, held a news conference to warn about the agenda. Representative Bob Good from Virginia accused the Biden-Harris regime, now in power in Washington, of wanting to subordinate Americans to the United Nations and the World Health Organization so that those organizations, when they would choose, could dictate to Americans what they could do or not do. Good, Representative Good, and Ralph Norman, Republican from South Carolina, led a press conference with other GOP members to express their opposition to what effectively would amount to a global governance. Did you hear the word? Global governance. Now, we've been talking about that for years here on this program. With increasing conviction, talk that should transform and prepare our minds and our hearts. But for many, it hasn't gained traction yet. Maybe it will today. They seek to facilitate the evolution of the United Nations. That is, the summit and the Biden administration, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, want to facilitate the evolution of the United Nations from an international cooperative body to an international governing body. Representative Good pointed out that in November, voters in this country will decide what kind of a country the U.S. will be. Since President Donald Trump had withdrawn the United States from the World Health Organization precisely because of these problems and the threat that it proposed, but the Biden-Harris regime immediately subjected Americans back to the whims of that organization again. Bob Good, the congressman, said, now the United Nations and a long list of bureaucrats want to be, quote, transforming the bureaucracy into global governance. Did you hear those words? Transforming the United Nations into global governance. Biden-Harris are supporting the surrender of the United States to this ideology, said Representative Good. They want America to be subordinated and governed by the United Nations. The report also explained Good is shocked by the legacy that news media's decisions to ignore the dispute. They won't even talk about it. This is the most important issue, he said, but it's getting the least amount of attention relative to the importance and its impact on our country and on the American people. The UN's agenda for the coming few days include three international deals. The leftist officials want to finalize it. The Pact for the Future, the Declaration for Future Generations, and the Global Digital Compact. Those three things. The Pact for the Future, the Declaration for Future Generations, and the Global Digital Compact. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres already has tried to convince member nations using the COVID-19 as justification that his power and that of the UN should be raised to levels so that they could do as they please in another world crisis. The Pact of the Future, or the Pact for the Future, includes an emergency platform that would give Guterres the power as UN chief to address what their agreement calls global shocks, which are whatever they deemed it to be. Those shocks could come from climatic or environmental events, more pandemics, biological events, and anything else that they say disrupts the global flow of goods, people, or finance. Yes, there's even the recognition of a possible major event in outer space. And technology would come under UN control through the Digital Compact. This summit provides the UN for authority to use artificial intelligence to stop what they call misinformation and disinformation, which, as leftists define it, includes facts or opinions they don't like. In other words, that are inconsistent with their agenda. So the idea that the Biden-Harris regime could arbitrarily impose such a bureaucracy on Americans actually prompted the House of Representatives already to approve a plan that would require the Senate approval of any such treaty. Would you like to hear more about it? I think you should. And we're going to talk about this Pact for the Future, the dangerous summit of the future that is beginning today through September 23rd. You're listening to Viewpoint, friends, and Viewpoint determines destiny. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. Today on Viewpoint, we're taking a look at the astounding summit of the future that begins today in New York for the United Nations gathered against the freedom of all peoples worldwide to subject all nations, including the United States of America, to the decisions of the Secretary General of the United Nations and the World Health Organization. Does that sound like something we should be promoting? Does that sound like something that would be consistent with freedom and liberty and justice for all? I don't think so. And certainly it's inconsistent with the Constitution of the United States. And so today on Viewpoint, we're going to take a deeper look at this and trace it to prophetic, biblical prophetic prophecy. So I'm glad that you've joined us. It's Conversation, as always, with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. And to get us going, we now are going to hear from Representative Bob Good, congressman from Virginia, who actually was one of those congressmen who led the presentation and warning of this event. We're going to hear from him right now.
Thank you for being here today for our press conference on what I describe as the most important issue that's getting the least amount of attention relative to its importance in our country. And like many other issues, we're going to be deciding on November 5 what kind of a country we're going to be, and it applies to this issue as well. President Trump had withdrawn the U.S. from the WHO, and of course the Biden administration, like every other disastrous decision they made, reversed those policies when the Biden-Harris administration got in charge. Well, later this week, the U.N. is going to hold a, quote, summit for the future, and they're going to produce, this is right from their website, an intergovernmentally negotiated, action-oriented pact for the future with a chapter on transforming global governance, ascending beyond the powers being sought by its subordinate agency, the WHO. The UN is seeking even broader and more powerful authority, as you will hear a lot about today. The Biden-Harris administration apparently intends to fully support the surrender and compliance of the U.S. to the UN in these endeavors. They are aligned with the international globalists that hate America, that hate the Constitution, that hate our founders, that hate our founding Judeo-Christian principles, and they want America to become like the rest of the world. They don't want us to be subordinate to or governed by our Constitution. No, they want America to be subordinate to and governed by the UN, the World Health Assembly, and the WHO. And in fact, they intend to join with others at the UN summit this week to vote to award additional powers to the UN Secretary General. They seek to facilitate the evolution of the UN from an international cooperative body to an international governing body. These powers would be triggered by any one of a number of so-called global emergencies, whether it was a so-called climate emergency, a health emergency, a cyber emergency, or a gun violence emergency, whatever that's supposed to be, a financial emergency, or whatever they deem appropriate. And the Biden-Harris administration is in full agreement with the UN and the WHO on efforts to place us under their authority and require such things as their international health regulations, including the surveillance of U.S. citizens, the censoring of dissenting views, and much more. The American people didn't vote for this. And they don't support this. And it's up to the people's representatives, that's us gathered here today, to have a responsibility to expose this and to reject this. The U.S. should defund the WHO again. We should withdraw from the WHO. Any agreements with the WHO or the UN should require Senate approval or disapproval. And a bipartisan House majority voted to require Senate approval just last week with Tom Tiffany's bill on the House floor. So I'm proud to be joined here by House colleagues and others who are appropriately concerned and educated, informed, and leading on this issue. Again, this is the most important issue that's getting the least amount of attention relative to its importance and its impact on our country and on the American people. And with that, I yield to the gentleman from South Carolina, Ralph Norman.
All right. You get the picture. This is not a mystery. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is something that is being engineered as we speak, beginning today and through the 23rd of September. As we launched the program with those famous words regarding Julius Caesar and the warning concerning his upcoming assassination by Brutus, beware the Ides of March. Beware the Ides of September, whatever Ides is. Beware this date. Because what is happening and what is about to happen is the intentional, open, defiant, egregious effort to replace God's government in the earth with a utopian government by man. When you lose and abandon the fear of the Lord, you necessarily find yourself in deep, deep trouble. We've talked here on Viewpoint oftentimes over the past years concerning the pursuit of globalism. As I've indicated, this is the biggest issue that we face. The biggest issue we face is not the economy. It's not immigration in and of itself, only as it relates to this globalist agenda. The biggest issue that we face in this country and in the world is the intentional direction of godless leaders to change the direction of history, to change the authority of nations and the independent sovereignty of nations, and to bring all under a global authority that will dictate the direction of humankind. In other words, we'll become a virtual god. As James Paul Warburg declared on February 17, 1950, before the United States Senate, he said, "We shall have world government whether or not you like it. The only question is whether world government will be achieved by conquest or consent." This effort through the United Nations is the effort to restore world or to create world government through consent. The consent of the nations. In other words, that the nations of the earth, including the United States of America, would release its sovereignty to the United Nations. And world government has been the dream and dominion of men throughout the ages, as we know, from the Tower of Babel there in Genesis chapter 11 to the trumpeting of the New World Order right now in our generation. Various kingdoms and rulers have sought to govern the then known world in power and glory. And inevitably, man's lust for power and glory always seeks to eclipse, escape, or even defy the power and glory of the Creator. And the problem with the pursuit of global government is not in the nature of government itself, because God ordained government as a minister to us for good, to protect us against evil and praise that which is good. That's not what the New World Order and global governance is about. And when humans forsake the fear of the Lord, God's ways of government and covenantal oversight and revelation are no longer available. So man, therefore, devises his own ways, seeking to create a utopian world order, promising peace on earth, and inevitably through a counterfeit prince of peace. So, in reality, the promise and hope of a utopian global order, ushering in world peace, are very alluring to the natural mind. I mean, after all, who in their right mind would not yearn for peace to avert a nuclear holocaust, which we're being warned of even as we speak? A worldwide conflagration. So the aura of fear with empty promises of peace, you know, it kind of leads us back to what the prophet Jeremiah said, peace, peace, where there is no peace. So the reality is, as the prophet Daniel made clear, there is going to be a global government. It is the fourth great government of the earth, an exceedingly dreadful beast, which I believe is the resurrected Roman Empire. The attack of Russia on Ukraine facilitated the uniting of the remaining countries in the farthest reach of the former Roman Empire into NATO. NATO now is, you might say, the complete embracing of the former Roman Empire to its farthest extremes. Now, against that global government, you see, Rome was declared the government of the world to be upon its shoulders to the day that Jesus was born. Remember that? So even as the King of Kings sent by God to reintroduce God's government in the world, Rome was ruling the world with its pseudo-peace. They called it Pax Romana, the Roman peace. So then along comes Jesus Christ and is declared to be the Prince of Peace. In fact, Isaiah, back in chapter 9, verse 6 and 7, we really only hear about this at Christmas time, but here's what he said. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end. Upon the throne of David, not Rome, and upon his kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth even forever. So the battle lines for dominion were drawn. God had already promised his Prince of Peace, and Satan the dragon would empower his counterfeit prince with a global government promising peace on earth. And that final world government would be a composite of the previous world powers, blending the best man had to offer to blasphemously compete with the Christ of God. That's where we are, friends. And today it's the battle for dominion. And the battle for dominion rages even in the heart of this presidential campaign. You say, how so? The number one reason for the current presidential campaign is not Democrats versus Republicans. It's whether or not we will have a global government or not. I want to refresh your memory. In 2015, when Donald J. Trump descended the elevator in Trump Towers, or the escalator, and declared his intent to make America great again. That was the theme. It was like a declaration of war against the globalists. They believed, the globalists, both Republican and Democrat, believed that we were on the cusp of entering into this final world government. And they were not going to allow anybody to come in and upset that apple cart. So for the very moment he declared in 2015, they did everything they could to destroy him. That's right. They brought lawsuits. They brought charges, criminal charges. They've kept him in court over and over and over and over again throughout the country. They brought two different impeachment charges, and all of these have failed. So then they sought to kill him. Now, you might think that's an extreme statement to make. I don't believe so. Because the majority of those in the global arena actually want that. They do not want him to survive. They do not want him to be able to stand in the way because they see him as the only person, the only force, the only power to be able to protect the United States against being assimilated into this new global government. That's what the battle is about. In a sense, it doesn't even matter what Kamala Harris says about all the other issues. She doesn't want to get into this because they don't want to reveal that this is the real issue. You don't hear it talked about in the news, do you? You won't even hear about it talked about in the so-called conservative news. You won't hear that. Why? Everybody's afraid of it. They're afraid of running afoul of powers, certain elite functions that could cause their monies to dry up and their power. This is a big deal. Beware the Ides of March. Beware the Ides of September. We'll be back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. saveus.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at saveus.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Direct from the United Nations website, the Pact for the Future. This is all about the Summit for the Future that begins today and goes through September 23rd. This is perhaps the most dangerous gathering of world leaders in the history of the world. From God's perspective, maybe not from man's perspective, but from God's perspective. Why? Because it is an act of universal defiance of God's declared order for the world. When God punished the world through the flood in Noah's day, and they came out from the flood, God decreed in the scriptures, you can go back and read it, he decreed that the peoples should divide and they should go out and spread across the earth and form their nations. And God actually decreed those nations. But they decided, no, we don't quite like that. We just don't feel comfortable with that. So they decided they were going to form a United Nations. Well, they called it the Tower of Babel. That's what they did. They built the Tower of Babel, united together to avoid or disregard or shake their fist against God. And they were led by a fellow by the name of Nimrod, whose very name implied rebellion against God. God looked down on what they were doing, and he said, now nothing shall be restrained from them what they imagine to do. They're all speaking the same thing. They're in agreement. They're in symphony together. And I'm not going to let this happen. So he confounded their languages. And that's where we get the word Babel from. Babylon. Babbling. They babbled. And they could not continue the project in unity. There have been many nations, many groups that have tried since then to unite the world. Whether it was Charlemagne with the Holy Roman Empire, or whether it was the Babylonian Empire, whether it was the Persian Empire, whether it was the Ottoman Empire, whether it was Alexander the Great's Grecian Empire, all of these were efforts to unify the world into one world order as best they could, and they all failed. This now is perceived to be mankind's final opportunity. The final opportunity. And they say we must seize the moment. Don't ever let a critical thing go without taking advantage of it. And that's their viewpoint right now. So they're heading to establish a pact for the future. An intergovernmentally negotiated, action-oriented pact for the future. So what does that look like? Well, here's what it says on the UN website. It's about shaping our world. That's a nice term for a new world order, isn't it? They say we must act now for our common future. Anytime you hear the words, our common future, or something like that, you know immediately that it's about global governance. It has nothing to do with godliness. It has to do with godlessness. We're going to define another world. So they say we are at a pivotal moment in history. The choices we make today will have a profound impact on current and future generations. This is our once-in-a-generation opportunity to come together as one world and create a future worth living for. Notice, our once-in-a-generation. What are they saying? This is the moment to be seized. Well, that's virtually the same language that George H.W. Bush used in 1990 when he first declared a new world order. He said it's getting ready to be born. You can read about it in my last four books. The quotes from George H.W. Bush, a Republican who was a consummate globalist, as was his daddy, as was his son, George W. Bush, as was Bill Clinton, as was Hillary Rodham Clinton, as is Joe Biden, as was John Kerry, as is Kamala Harris. So again, reading again now from the United Nations site there, their website. A once-in-a-generation opportunity to come together as a world. The summit is an opportunity for world leaders to make tough choices, to pave the way for global peace and prosperity, to restore our planet, promote digital transformation for our common future. Those are the nice, sweet words describing global governance. That's what their view is. So they ask the question, what is the summit of the future? Well, here is their distillation. A high-level event bringing world leaders together to forge a new international consensus on how we deliver a better present and safeguard the future. This once-in-a-generation opportunity serves as a moment to mend eroded trust and demonstrate that international cooperation can effectively achieve agreed goals and tackle emerging threats. In other words, to merge all the nations of the earth together in a world government. Again, with the Pact of the Future, again taken from the UN website, what is the Pact of the Future? An intergovernmental negotiated action-oriented pact containing sustainable development and financing for development, international peace and security, science, technology, and innovation, and digital cooperation. That's a one-world government, friends, over all money, medical, everything now will be digital, and the world government will have control. Youth and future generations, and finally, transforming global governance. Transforming global governance. What they mean is establishing global governance. Not transforming global governance, but establishing global governance. Because for now, it's more of a agreement to agree. Now what they want to move this UN thing into is an actual legally supported document signed by the nations of the earth to agree to submit their sovereignty and authority to a world government under the United Nations. In other words, in effect, it could make the Secretary General of the United Nations the Antichrist. I'm not saying he would be, but it could because he's the leader. Now, all of that having been shared with you to set the stage, I want to put this in a bigger picture for you. And also, the application of how this is transforming, how this is being in the process of being transformed. It may be a bit shocking to some of our listeners, but you need to hear it, especially to many of our Roman Catholic listeners. Because the Vatican is right in the heart of this movement. The last three popes have all and each and all declared their support for a new global government, a new world order. Now, that may come as a surprise to you, but it's absolutely true. And the worst offender is Pope Francis. So we can't lose sight of the global context in which this accelerating move toward unity is taking place. It's not just governmental, it's religious. The world leaders know, even though they're not religious people, even though they're not God-fearing people, they know that in order to get the support of the nations, which have many religious people in them, they have to have a strong religious component to make this happen. So I'm going to share that with you in this second half of the program. Again, you're listening to Viewpoint. There are no neutral viewpoints, friends. If we cannot go back and connect the dots from what we have been seeing over the past 50, 60 years, and its pattern toward the fulfillment of biblical prophecy, we're without hope. In other words, we don't have discernment. We don't have eyes to see. We don't have ears to hear. We don't have a will to understand, and therefore, words will be wasted. You say, well, I can't do anything to stop this. That's true, except you can vote. If you don't vote, you're voting to sustain this. Did you know that? If you don't vote for one that opposes this, you're actually voting to advance the cause of a one-world government. No matter what you say, that's what you're doing. You can't punt on this one. You can't run around the corner and hide and say, I didn't know about it. Yes, you do. And you need to tell your friends about it. You need to have your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, your pastor, listen to this program today. Really, I mean that. This is not a fear-mongering program. It's about confronting the reality from God's viewpoint of what is taking place in our world so that we can respond in faith and without fear. That's the purpose. We'll be right back after this. Stay tuned.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click sell church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click sell church.
Now, in this segment of the program today on Viewpoint, we're going to trace, or attempt at least in a summary fashion, to trace the spiritual aspect undergirding the advance toward a new world government in fulfillment of biblical prophecy, to shake its fist against the God of creation and against Christ himself, that humankind can become its own savior. That's really what it's all about. And the non-God-fearing globalists, those who are primarily leading the geopolitical movement called globalism, know that they must have a strong religious component that the people in general will embrace and can believe in. And that's what they're looking for. And they have found such a person. It's called the Pope. And the Pope, the papacy, has been playing the game with them, because the papacy also wants to be king of the mountain. The papacy wants to ride the globalist beast to power, thinking that somehow that will bring about a whole world submitted to the papacy as the surrogate or vicar of Christ, claiming to be Christ in the flesh. That has already declared that its intent is not to rule and reign from the Vatican in Rome, but to rule and reign from the Temple Mount. In order to understand that bigger picture, you need to get a copy of my book, King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic and End Time Battle, for it is said that he who rules the Temple Mount rules the world. It's on our website for $15. I think it's a $20 book. Yours for $15, right there on the website. All you have to do is order it there. You can give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or you can write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255, writing a check and $6 for postage and handling. Now, I'm going to mention a couple of other books also here, so keep that in mind. But that's the first one, King of the Mountain, because it sets the bigger stage for what we're talking about here. It's about the spiritual goal of world powers to rule and reign from the very place where God said he chose to place his name there, and where God said in Psalm 2, he has already declared that his Messiah, Yeshua, Jesus Christ, Yeshua HaMashiach, will rule from that Temple Mount. The nations say, not so fast. We got another plan. Now, a Vatican insider by the name of Malachi Martin wrote a book years ago called The Keys of This Blood. It's a very large book, about 700-800 pages. And I have that in my library, have read it thoroughly. And he said, he was a Vatican insider now, and he said, the newest game in the city of man is the building of a geopolitical structure. The newest game in the city of man is the building of a geopolitical structure. He said, everyone who is anyone in terms of sociopolitical and economic power is engaging in it. Ultimately, all nations, great and small, will be involved. He said, it is the millennium end game. Now, bear in mind, this is coming from a Vatican insider. So where does the Vatican fit in? Now, I'm going to have to distill some things here. You can pick all this up in my book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times, under the title Beast of Blasphemy. According to Malachi Martin, since the start of his pontificate in October of 1978, Pope John Paul II was a consummate geopolitician. Malachi Martin said he heralds a new and as yet unrecognized force in the geopolitics of nations, a force that he actually claims will be the ultimate and decisive factor determining the new world order. Now, I'm not making this up. That's a direct quote from a Vatican insider. And that's why he said during his pontificate, John Paul II visited 130 countries. He invited representatives of 100 of the world's largest religions to join him in Italy for the ultimate multicultural and religious pluralistic prayer meeting, directing prayers to over 300 million gods, the most traveled pope in history. Even established, reestablished relations with Israel after 2,000 years of rejection. And Vatican City is not just the locus of Roman Catholicism, but it's an independent state. In fact, the Vatican is considered among the nations, whereas God said of Israel, they shall not be reckoned among the nations. So, the Pope, as Bishop of Rome, known as the Vicar of Christ, has absolute legislative, executive, and judicial power, the ultimate merger of church and state. And John Paul II was the only pope in history at that time of his pontificate to actually call for a new world order. So I'm going to read to you a CNN news release from Vatican City on January 1st, 2004. Here it is. John Paul II rang in the new year with a renewed call for peace and the creation of a new world order. He stressed that to bring about peace, there needs to be a new respect for international law and the creation of a new international order based on the goals of the United Nations. Now, in order to save time here, we've got to move forward from John Paul II and each of the popes since then has called for a new world order. So how might the Vatican bring about such a catastrophic union while at the same time seeming to the casual religious or political eye to be promoting the kingdom of God? That's the big issue. Well, we get the picture of this from a series of papal encyclicals. So consider the insidious manner in which such incrementalism of a new world order is being accomplished under the so-called Christian banner of caring for humanity or our common humanity. The underlying globalist current is sweeping nearly all unsuspectingly onto the back of the prophesied beast. So we start. Now, we've talked about John Paul II. Let's go to Pope Benedict XVI. Christmas 2005, he gave a message. The life-giving power of his light is an incentive for building a new world order, he said. A united humanity will be able to confront many troubling problems of the present time. When he says a new world order, what they actually are meaning is a one world government. 4 years later, in 2009, in another one of his encyclicals, translated Charity in Truth, he crafted 79-point encyclical framed under the rubric of evangelization. And portrayed the Vatican as facilitating force for instituting a true world political order. He called it evangelization. Really? That's how he saw, as the Pope, saw himself as the leader of the Roman Catholic Church to establish dominion over the world. That's what he's called evangelism, dominion over the world under the papacy by establishing a new world order. He says such an authority would need to be regulated by law to observe consistently the principles of subsidiarity and solidarity, to seek to establish the common good, there's those words again, to make a commitment to securing authentic, integral human development inspired by the values of charity and truth. All of this is word salad, friends, designed to make globalism sound sweet and nice. He calls it the establishment of a greater degree of international ordering for the management of globalization. I'm reading to you from his encyclical. Then, he also said, as reported in the New York Times, Pope Benedict XVI called for a radical rethinking of the global economy, urging the establishment of a true world political authority to oversee the economy and work for the so-called common good again. In 2012, he delivered a speech before the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace in Rome, in which he again called for a unified world government, called a new evangelization of society. How is a world government an evangelization of society? Only if you think through the mind of the Pope that to curry the favor of secular globalist leaders of a new world order will enable him as the Pope to bring all of them under the mothering wings of the Roman Catholic Church. That's what he calls evangelization. It's unbelievable. A reporter says, in no uncertain terms, this is a clear call for a new world order, the ultimate goal of the Roman Catholic Church. I didn't make this up. It may initially sound benevolent, observed the reporter, but based upon the Roman Catholic Church's sordid history of consolidating power and mandating its religion on societies through a blending of church and state, it is hard to call such proposition by Pope Benedict anything other than a call for a dictatorial new world order guided and controlled by the Roman Catholic Church. So, it should come as no surprise that in 2010, the Catholic Church sought the establishment of a new central world bank that would be responsible for regulating the global financial industry and international money supply, of course, headed by the papacy. Then came Pope Francis, 2015. It was the most anticipated papal letter for decades, published in five languages, a rare encyclical called Laudato Si, or Praise Be. It was time to have maximum impact ahead of the Pope's meeting with Barack Obama and his address to the UN General Assembly. And on, he called for a new world order. Friends, are you beginning to see what is really happening? Are we beginning to see what is really happening? And this weekend, the consummation may very well be taking place. And our current regime, Obama and Harris, are cheering it on with vigor. Get a copy of my book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. I think you can see why that's going to be needed. $25, we'll put it in your hands. The latest book just came out. Saveus.org, saveus.org. Write to us, call us, and pray for deliverance.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.